this morning is United States against Bell. Mr. Blumenfield.
May it please the court, counsel, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal time. This is a case about overzealous law enforcement officers who chose to conduct a search without seeking a warrant, even though they had sufficient time to get one. Then, as the district court concluded, the officers changed their story after the fact to try to justify the search.
Tell me this. Would you have a better argument if Bell had been forthcoming about the fact that he was still staying at the Holiday Inn, or is it your argument that Bell's lies were irrelevant as to whether the officer's actions were reasonable?
Well, there is authority that we cite in our brief, Your Honor, that indicates that even if a defendant is not completely forthcoming, that doesn't waive his rights under the Fourth Amendment. However, it should be noted that Bell wasn't entirely dishonest. Bell gave the police officers at the first opportunity. He told them, I was staying at a hotel by the airport. Within minutes of them asking any questions about the key cards, he gave them information that allowed them to very quickly find out exactly where that hotel room was. And so I don't think that really affects his rights here at all.
The problem, maybe it's Judge Roedner's problem, certainly mine, is that he said, and I've checked out, which, of course, would lead the police to believe that this was not something that needed to be followed up immediately. Indeed, it also sounds like an abandonment of any privacy interest in the rooms.
Well, that is...
Right? If the police say, can I search X? And the defendant says, I have no interest whatsoever in X. It's hard to come back later and say, you've invaded my privacy interest when you searched X.
Well that final conclusion, Your Honor, is expressly contrary to authority that we cite in our brief, which indicates there's a case where the defendant indicated that he was no longer living at his current location. The police then searched that location, and the court expressly found that by saying, I don't live at that location, that was not a waiver of his privacy right there. Also, the fact that
is that correct? I mean, and I guess I want to just throw another thing into the mix here, because when all is said and done, the police show up at this hotel room, room 204, and the girlfriend says, come on in. And so I myself have been focusing more on the safe than the room. I have no problem getting the police into the room if she says it's fine with me and she's the only person in the room. I mean, as you're well aware, you know, the joint occupancy cases, Supreme Court describes as a very fine line, the line that they draw there, and it's very fine indeed, but certainly nothing like this. You know, if the only person in the room says, come on in, why can't they come in?
Well, but Your Honor is precisely right to focus more on the search of the safe. No one is arguing here that the woman...
So we can just forget about the hotel room per se, but then when we get to the safe, we're talking about minutes. They didn't know anything about that, did they?
Well, Your Honor is precisely right that that is the reason that we cannot only focus on the safe. Roselli tells us that we must focus on the entire time the officers had a right to seek a warrant. And in this occasion, the officers found out and clearly had, at the very minimum, 45 minutes from the time that they set out from the police station to the time that they entered that safe.
But they didn't know there was going to be a safe that they wanted to enter. Some hotels leave them down by the desk, you know, because they can be compromised. There are all different ways that hotels handle safes.
That's true that they didn't know for an absolute... They did not know for an absolute certainty that there would be a safe in the hotel room. But the Roselli test and the test that this court has adopted on multiple occasions is, what would a reasonable officer do?
At the time the safe in Bell's room was searched, had any leads been developed on Colon's whereabouts that dissipated the urgency of locating him or suggested to the officers that he was no longer alive at that time? In other words, what evidence supports your claim that any exigency specifically related to the safe dissipated once Colon himself was, you know, he's not in that room?
Well, that predicate actually addresses it directly. The officers need to show not only that there was the generalized need to find Mr. Colon. We don't dispute that they were looking for Mr. Colon and that all 20 officers who were looking for him were justified in doing so. But there needs to be exigency, there needs to be probable cause specifically related to that hotel room safe. When they got into the room, there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that Mr. Colon had ever been in that room. they did find Ms. Doane. Ms. Doane said, I've never seen any kidnapping victim. I've been in this room for a period of time. I've never seen this individual.
But why do you have such a limited view? There was certainly plenty of probable cause to believe that Mr. Bell had been in that room, and he could have put a key to some other room inside the safe. He could have done all sorts of things, which would have been quite consistent with Ms. Doane's not having seen Mr. Cologne.
And there needs to be, in order to justify the search under exigent circumstances, there needs to be probable cause specific to that safe, and there also needs to be the government has the affirmative burden, must show affirmatively, as this court has ruled in Talkington and various other cases, that there was not time to seek a warrant. Even were there probable cause, which it does not seem that there would be, given the fact that there was no evidence whatsoever that Mr. Cologne or any evidence leading to him was ever in this room at any point.
But I'm saying let's stipulate that. I mean, I'm less worried about that than the possibility that the police thought that there could be something in the safe that would lead them to Mr. Cologne. They of course thought probably there'd be something about drugs too, since Ms. Doane said something about that. But why do we care about that if there was a chance that they might be able to find Mr. Cologne?
Well, again, even if that were the case, there is a three-part requirement. If one of the requirements isn't met, then there is no justification of the search under exigent circumstances. But with respect to probable cause, there needs to be some connection between that safe and what the officers think is going on. When they get into that room, the only thing that they know about the situation is that there has never been a kidnapping victim in that room at any point.
And they also know, as Judge Rovner was saying, Mr. Bell has lied about when he checked out. They know that he claimed to be homeless, but he's got $1,000 on him and doesn't look like a homeless person. They know, and he's picked up the bag with the ransom. They know things to make them think he's associated with this.
And he could easily
put a key. I'm just using that as an example of one thing that's very small that might fit in a safe and yet be extremely pertinent to this search.
And they may have had an argument at that point that there was probable cause. They may have been able to make that argument.
I also want to ask you, because there's a footnote 3 in the district court's opinion, in which he says the government has not argued that consent obtained after the fact would have justified the search by way of the doctrines of independent source or inevitable discovery. So I take it the government doesn't make a peep about inevitable discovery at the district court level, but that normally leads to forfeiture rather than waiver. And I wonder if things had gone exactly the way you think they should have and they had phoned in for a warrant on the safe, they still would have found the drugs.
Well, it's unclear whether the magistrate judge would have granted that or not. We
you
contend
don't
think
that
there.
So? I don't know.
Not unclear.
Well, the purpose of the Fourth Amendment is precisely to make that happen. Inevitable discovery would require, and Your Honor is exactly correct, that it requires, because those arguments have been forfeited, those would have to be preserved in some way. They would have to make that argument. I just think
It invites itself as a question, and if, in fact, these drugs would have been discovered, we wouldn't even have an inevitable discovery doctrine if we didn't have some cases where people fail to get warrants, and then later on it turns out you can still use the evidence, right? So the doctrine fits these circumstances.
We don't think that it does fit the circumstances, Your Honor, but even if it did, the government, in raising this on appeal, doesn't make any reference to the fact that that good cause for not raising it below. The only cause, in fact, would certainly not be described as good cause. It was the fact that we have officers who are changing their story after the fact, and that probably is the reason why this wasn't raised below. So the inevitable discovery doctrine is not available to the government. And furthermore, whether or not they may have had probable cause, they may have thought they did, it was incumbent on them, under the circumstances, to call a magistrate judge and say, here's the situation. We believe that we have probable cause to search the safe. What should we do? And that's the call that needed to be made and wasn't. And because it wasn't made, there were no exigent circumstances here. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bottrum.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I think the Court's really hit this on the head with respect to its questions to counsel. I think, first of all, Judge, to address your question about abandonment, given the fact that when the officers actually got to the hotel, they were able to verify that Francis Bell had a room at the hotel, I don't know necessarily in that situation, given the fact that he might have previously lied about his occupancy, that they would be confident or in taking the position that he had actually abandoned the property, particularly since he was paying.
It's not an argument you've made, so right. I'm not worried about it one way or the other.
Very good. Now, with respect to the argument that somehow the exigency had dissipated, again, I think the panel has gotten it right. The exigency had not dissipated at the time of the search. There was no evidence.
Well, doesn't the fact that the officers waited approximately 2 hours before questioning Bell about the hotel key cards tend to undercut their testimony that exigent circumstances required them to search both the hotel room and the safe?
I don't think that's right, because there, as it was clear from the record, there was a lot of activity going on during the course of the investigation. Agent Warren was the individual that was questioned. One of the individuals questioning Mr. Bell indicated that right after he had apprehended Mr. Bell, they had done a brief interview with him at the scene. And after that point in time, what their focus was on was actually trying to develop leads at the scene at the Logan Square subway station.
Has anyone ever offered any reason why the officers involved didn't look into the Holiday Inn key cards when they were first found in his wallet after his arrest?
Judge, I don't believe so. I think what really it boils down to, Judge, is that the agents at the time were trying to follow this the leads as best they could. And one of the, I guess in their professional judgment, one of the judgments they made while on the street at night was to try to look for other people on the scene. And they had done a door-to-door search. There was testimony from both, I think, Officer Boudreau as well as Agent Warren that they conducted a door-to-door search because their thought was that since there was a low-powered walkie-talkie on the defendant, that there might be some other accomplices within the area of the defendant that were actually still there. Uh-huh. And perhaps even that the kidnapped victim might be secreted in a building that was near the Logan Square subway station. So there is evidence in the record that they went door-to-door with the hope perhaps maybe that the victim was right there near the subway station. And so I don't think it would be right to fault the officers for perhaps not selecting a specific piece of evidence to follow. We know it was a fast-paced investigation. There are 20 or so officers involved. There are multiple leads being followed. It obviously, sitting back here today, knowing how things came out, it's easier to know, well, maybe we should have gone here or maybe we should have gone there. But when you have some agents in the field that are actually trying to follow these leads as best they can, I think it would be probably unfair to the officers to try to second-guess what leads they chose to follow and the manner in which they followed them. Once Agent Warren got back to the station and they didn't have any progress on their efforts to find the kidnapped victim out near the Logan Square subway station and their efforts to actually interview other people that had been taken into custody had failed, they did turn to the key cards. I don't think it's really fair for the defendant to now suggest, after having lied about his residency, that, well, the police should have figured out earlier that that's where I had a hotel room and they should have gotten a warrant earlier. In terms of there being probable cause to get into the safe, I think the court has made its views clear that, yes, there was probable cause. I don't think there's any magistrate in the building, if they had been approached for a warrant, would have denied a warrant given the circumstances, given the gravity of the offense, as well as the persistent lies that the defendant had told. In their reply brief, the defense has argued in one instance that, and there has been some reference to it again today, that the officers changed their story, they changed the timing, etc. We have not challenged that on appeal. We take the district court's findings as they are. We may not be satisfied with the way the district court resolved all the factual findings it made in terms of its credibility findings. However, the record is as what it is. The standard for review here is clear error, and the district court did find, amongst its findings, that Ms. Donas consented to entry into the room, and the period of time between the entry into the room and the search of the safe was very brief. The only testimony we have in the record concerning that was that it was 10 to 15 minutes. That certainly, under these circumstances, was not sufficient time within which to actually obtain a warrant, whether in person or over the telephone. And unless the panel has any further questions, I see the balance of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Blumenfeld?
It's important to note again that if there was sufficient time to seek a warrant and the officers did not seek one, that alone indicates that they cannot justify the search under exigent circumstances, the only opportunity available to themselves. They found Mr. Bell at 9:30. He was in a witness room at 10 p.m. being questioned. The officers saw these key cards at that time. Your Honor's question is a very good one. There is no explanation of why they did not decide to pursue that lead earlier and then why suddenly, later on that night, it became emergent to look into that absolutely as soon as possible.
It seems like you're arguing for a harsh rule, though, because when you have a situation, at least like this one, the police don't have unlimited resources any more than anyone else does, and they have to make some very fast decisions about priorities. And even if they didn't have anything else to do, 4 hours does sound like a long time if they're busy. Are we supposed to tell them, as Mr. Bacciu suggested, we should not, that they structured their priorities improperly?
That's not a call we're required to make. All we're required to say, Your Honor,
they can't use the evidence, though. I mean, that would be a fairly harsh penalty for the way they structured their priorities.
We're not requiring them to structure their priorities in any certain way. All we're requiring, Your Honor, is we're saying when you have that lead and you're pursuing that lead, if you have sufficient resources, and clearly they did in this case, there was an assistant state's attorney, there were 20 officers. When those officers set out for the hotel, somebody else needed to call up and get a warrant. And it's that failure that we're focusing on, and it's that failure that accident circumstances is exactly predicated upon.
Okay.
I see that my time has expired. For those reasons and those mentioned in our briefs, we respectfully request that this court reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blumenfeld. And Mr. Blumenfeld, we thank you, and we thank your law firm for taking the appointment in this case, and the assistance you've been to both your client and the court. Thanks very much.